All right. Well, in the church today, and I'm talking globally, I'm not talking about specifically here, but I see that there's an attraction for some pastors to present the grandioso large topics that camp out on those things that come up in God's Word. And some pastors want people to be impressed with their knowledge of great theological matters or timeless moral principles, and those things are good in and of themselves. But in their pursuit to impress, they sometimes neglect the simpler, more practical things that are essential to living real, spiritual, meaningful lives, the day-to-day stuff. And one of those more simpler and practical topics is a word that means a great deal to me personally, friendship. I value close friendships, okay? I try to be a good friend to the people that I'm friends with, and I want great friendships in my life, okay? It's important. And the reason why I think I value that, because in my 20-somethings, I thought friends were like a dime a dozen. They're just going to keep on coming. This is just going to keep happening. And when you get into your 40s, you realize that the real true friend, that what we're going to talk about in the text this morning, the one that sticks closer than a brother, the real friend, the person that's going to walk with you through every situation, they're a rarity. They're a rare find. And so there's a different perspective that you come from when you understand, no, friends are not a dime a dozen. The real good ones, you should cherish. And you should be thankful for them. Now, in the early church, authentic friendships, they weren't just an idea. They were a way of life. I mean, just read the book of Acts, chapter 2. They made friends by being loyal to one another, just as Jesus Christ was loyal to them. And they formed community by showing love and kindness toward one another. And they didn't demand that love and kindness be returned to them. And what was the result of this? I mean, it was huge. Just read, once again, the book of Acts. It laid the foundation for a worldwide movement as people were added to the church daily. But could it be that the modern day church has slowly moved away from that movement? I think there's a bit of truth to that. I think we could all agree to that. Joey, why do you personally believe that? Well, we live in this world system that's purposely designed to cater to our flesh. You guys get that, right? I mean, what do we have over here? Burger King. Have it your way, right? McDonald's is right over here. What do they say? You deserve a break today, right? Now, how many of you guys travel around the country for business? Southwest Airlines says, ding, you are free to move about the country. That's their slogan. So what are all three of those companies, and there's many more that I can mention, but what are all those three companies trying to tell you? It's all about you. It's all about you. The world revolves around you. Also, it's a fact that we live in a disposable society today. We throw things away all the time. Think about the things that you just threw away just this week. How many times does stuff in your refrigerator go bad, right? You throw away stuff all the time. I mean, we have disposable things, disposable cameras, disposable diapers, and the products that are actually being marketed to us are not made to last. Not like it was in our grandfather and grandmother's time where things were made to last. They don't make them last anymore. And they actually do this on purpose. It's actually a manufacturing companies call it planned obsolescence. And it's the condition of no longer being used or useful. Why do they do that? Well, because they want the stuff that they sell to us to wear out so that we'll go buy more of their stuff, right? That's why they do that. I mean, we have expiration dates on almost everything now. And warranties, let me jump on my soapbox for a second. Warranties, okay? I have a conspiracy theory. They know, and I mean they know when your stuff's going to break. 2 days after the warranty's over. They know. Some chip they put in there, some satellite, something. They know when it's going to break, okay? Advertising. Advertising's in our face hundreds of times a day. Someone's always telling us what you need. And advertising says this: if you don't have the newest, thinnest, most feature-packed model, you're hopelessly out of style. Got to get with the times, man. You got to keep up with the Joneses. It's out with the old and it's in with the new. And this way of thinking is so prevalent We see it all the time. It's so much in our face that it gets ingrained in us as an acceptable way of thinking. Well, Joey, what's your point? What are you driving to? Well, if we aren't careful, church, then we can start to think about people that way. Our friends can become disposable to us. Our friends can have an expiration date just like our products do. See, when a friend wears out their usefulness to us, we can ditch them and go find someone else to be useful to us. And if you're a friend, and I have friend in quotes in my notes, if you're a friend that makes a mistake, you're dead to me. I defriend you. I have this little ceremony in my mind, and I bury you. I lay to rest so-and-so. And that's what we do. And it's scary how quickly people can do that today. I mean, look at the whole thing that when the Supreme Court ruling came down on homosexuality, I was embarrassed by some of the things that I was seeing. I was embarrassed that Christians were defending Christians from social media sites. Are you kidding me? We can defriend one another, okay? And what we do is we move on and we find someone else to cater to our "it's all about me" personality. There's an alarming increase in the divorce rate of couples that have been married for 20 years. That really concerns me, because I've heard of the 7-year itch. I've never heard of the 20-year itch. And I just want to encourage you, whether you've been married for 20 years or you've been married for 2 years, let me tell you how you get there. When you're living your life and you have kids, you bring kids into the mix, okay? You have to realize that we have kids to eventually get rid of them. They're going to go bye-bye. Amen? I mean, I'm practicing my sidekick right now, you know? I got a 20-year-old and an 18-year-old right now. But we have them so that we can have them for a short moment to train them up so that they can go have their own lives. And here's what happens. Here's the trap that people get caught in, is your world revolves around the kids. It revolves around work. It revolves around your hobbies. And then the kids leave like they're supposed to, and you're sitting across the table from one another, and you're like, I don't know who you are anymore. Because I invested so much time in the kids and in the hobbies and in the work, especially the kids. And I had somebody wise come to me about 10 years ago and warn me of this. And so I'm pretty sober-minded about that. Like, I really protect that time with my wife, that the home revolves around our relationship. It doesn't revolve around what the kids want. And I remember my wife a couple of times coming to me and telling me, hey, well, the kids need this or the kids need that or whatever. And sometimes my response to her is, well, somebody failed to tell me that the world revolved around them. Nicely, I said it nicely, just saying, you know, I don't want you to think I was rude, but I said it nicely. Yeah. Backpedal, backpedal. But my point is I was very cautious to not have the world revolve around our kids, that our kids revolved around us. That's the point I'm trying to make. So the other thing is that, and here's what happens. Here's what you forgot to do if you're in that position, is you forgot to invest in the friendship. My wife and I were great friends before we ever started dating, before we got married. We were great friends. And that's what we try to focus on in our relationship today, is being great friends, because that takes care of everything else. The other thing that's a challenge for us is that people move all the time with their jobs. I mean, it's hard to put down roots of friendships when you don't stay in one two place too long. I remember this being very difficult for my wife when I was in the corporate world, because I think I moved her, if memory serves me, to 5 different states in 7 years. And that was hard, because I was the guy that you would hire to go fix your broken sales team. So I would go here, I would do well, the Lord would bless, I would get promoted, I would go somewhere else, and then she's left behind with 2 small kids and selling the house and all that's involved with that. Well, I'm going fixing the broken sales team. I remember one time her coming to me and saying, I know this is what we have to do in order for you to provide for us, but I just want you to know this is hard for me. Because she was never able to establish deep roots of friendship. And my wife's a very friendly person. So it's difficult. The other thing is this generation has more opportunities for communication than any time in history. I mean, we have email, smartphones, and social media that make it possible for us to interact with each other 24/7. yet suicide rates are higher than ever. Antidepressant sales were around $10 billion last year. We have more connections to other people than ever before, but they're not producing authentic relationships. People still feel alone. And people need, God has put in us, hardwired us, to have authentic community with one another, a sense of connecting with another person. Friendship. Aristotle said this, friendship is a single soul dwelling in two bodies. I like that. Now, even more clever is a seven-year-old boy put it this way. I love when seven-year-old girls or boys talk because something profound comes out of their mouth. This is what a seven-year-old boy said about friendship. A friend is someone who knows all about me and likes me just the way I am. Amen? Now, those are both good sayings. I like them. I buy into them. But what does God's love letter to us, his word, teach us about friendship? Well, we're going to talk about it this morning in the book of Proverbs. And the book of Proverbs is filled with wisdom. The theme of the book of Proverbs is skill in living. Teaches us how to be skillful in the way that we live our lives. And it was written by a man who said to be the second wisest man to ever walk this planet, Solomon. Jesus is first. Solomon is the wisest, second wisest man that will ever walk this planet. And he was the second born son of King David. And what do we remember King David for? That he was a man after God's own heart. Now, the book of Proverbs starts out by telling us who wrote it and what it's good for. Proverbs, it says, Proverbs, what it is it's a wise saying. And so the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, and here's what it's good for obtaining wisdom, discipline, for understanding words of insight, for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life, and for doing what is right, what is just, and what is fair. Now, I personally believe that wise people are good at choosing, building, and maintaining great relationships in their life. Wise people are good at choosing, building, and maintaining great relationships in their life. But how do you do it? It's going to take some instruction and some skill. And it's not easy to be a true friend to somebody, as we're going to see. So let's start by looking at the traits of an authentic friend, a true friend. What's a true friend? What are the traits of a true friend? Well, I've broken it up into four categories. I call it the four C's of a true friend. And you can either view these as four marks of a true friendship or the four building blocks to forming a true friendship. And I entitled this morning's message, Would I Want to Be My Own Friend? So let's look at the first C of a true friend. The first C is consistency or constancy. And here's what it is. It's the quality of being faithful and dependable. Now, some synonyms of that are faithfulness, loyalty, reliability, and dependability. So if you're not already there, open your Bibles to Proverbs 17:17. And we'll look at what this first trait looks like. Proverbs 17:17 says this, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. A friend there, here's what a friend is, according to this text. It's a person you know well and regard with affection and trust. And there's two school of thoughts of what Solomon might be saying here. Either he's saying that the friend is good for this and the brother is good for that. So he's talking about two people in this verse, the friend and the brother. He's saying that one's good for this, one's good for that. Or he's saying that a friend is good for this and is a close friend is even better. So the friend and the brother in this verse could be the same person. So the first part of the verse, it's pretty straightforward. It says, a friend loves at all times. A friend loves in every situation. It's just like when last time I was up here, I was teaching you guys through Psalm 34, where David, after he gets really crazy stupid and does some really dumb things, the conclusion that he comes to is, I will bless the Lord at all times. I will bless the Lord in every situation. That's where he comes to. So a friend loves at all times in every situation. We're supposed to love one another at all times. During what kinds of times? All of them. the good ones, the bad ones, the ordinary ones, the routine ones, the normal ones. How about the dysfunctional ones? All of them. You see, you can't be a true friend without making yourself available to your friends. You know what? When he says, you know what at all times requires from you? It requires your time. Time that you might not have. Time that you might not want to give up. Especially in times of trouble, that's mentioned in the next part of the verse, because when people are going through difficult times, there isn't something quick and fancy that you can say or do to help that person quickly get over it. In fact, it's going to require more of your time than just loving your friend in every situation. At least that's been my experience. When I have friends that are going through difficult times, it requires more of my time than just normal maintenance of the relationship. Okay? My point is that it's going to cost you something to be a true friend. Now look at the second part of the verse. It says, and a brother is born for adversity. That means distress or trouble. It means personal anguish and adverse circumstances. Raise your hand if you've ever been through those type of times in your life. Okay? If you haven't, come see me after service. I'll invent something for you. We'll help you with that. So remember, either he's talking about two people here, a friend, one who has no birth connections to you, loves you in every situation, or your brother, your blood relative, is faithful to you when you're going through difficult times. That's what that could be saying. Or he's talking about one person in this verse. The friend and the brother are the same person. So he's describing a close friend. The true friend comes up in the time of need, and the friendship becomes closer, like that between brothers. Because we start off by having acquaintances in life, right? People that we casually get to know. And then some of those people, they move on to kind of the friendship, okay? And then where you get together every now and then, but they're not your acquaintance. You kind of know what's going on in their life. But then there's people that move from that stage into a close friend where you're doing life with them. When they're happy, you're happy. If they're not doing well, you're not doing well. Closeness, oneness. A commentator said this, a real friend loves his friend in prosperity and in adversity. He is more than a friend in time of need. He is a brother, as affectionate and as trustworthy as one connected by the closest ties of relationship. It's been said that a friend is one who comes in when the whole world has gone out. And my point is this, true friendship or brotherhood is made stronger through adversity. You folks that have served into the military probably get this more than any of us, because when you go to war with somebody, it bonds you like nothing else. You're close. I mean, I've read about people that after the war, because my grandfather was a World War II vet, and still talking to people that he served with that are alive 40 years, 30 years later. Closeness. And that's what this is talking about. You know, an example of that is what happened here last weekend. You guys know Pastor Dave wasn't here. And if you're new here, Pastor Dave meets with about 15 to 20 pastors on a weekly basis. They meet on Thursdays, and the whole purpose of them getting together is to pray for each other, to hold each other up, to be a friend to each other, and to pray for this city, to pray for the town of Castle Rock. And one of the guys that is in that group, Pastor Mark Marble, he's the senior pastor of Castle Rock Bible Church, and his wife of 33 years passed away from cancer a couple months ago. And so he took some time off. Now, he's a biblical man. He understands the perspective on death and that there's a hope that doesn't disappoint, that he's going to eventually see his wife again, that he knows where she's at and he's rejoicing over that. But the human side of that is he's hurting because she's not there anymore. And there's all the roller coaster emotions that come with that. And so what the senior pastors decided to do last weekend is he came back last weekend to teach. First time that he'd been there in a couple months to his congregation. And they decided, we're not going to teach in our church this weekend. We're going to go be there for Mark. We're going to serve as ushers and greeters. We're going to serve his body. Our our team, our children's ministry, sent a team down there to do children's ministry for them so the people that would normally serve in children's ministry could hear from their pastor. So when he got up there and he looked out and he saw his friends, do you think that blessed him? Because they probably wanted to be in their own pulpits, taking care of their own sheep. But they said, we're going to be there for our friends. See, I think that Pastor Mark Marble knows that those guys love him and have a deep friendship for him, but they proved it last weekend by being there for him in his adversity. And so should we. Amen? That's the point. Turn to Proverbs 18:24. Now, this is a parallel passage to Proverbs 17:17, so it gives us a little bit more insight into what Solomon is trying to describe here. In Proverbs 18:24, he says that a man who has friends must himself be friendly. Pretty straightforward. If you want friends, be friendly. Friendliness wins friends. That's how that works, okay? Don't wait for somebody to come reach out to you. You reach out to somebody. Can I share a pet peeve that I have with you quick? Will you be offended if I share one? You know what drives me crazy? It's clicky there. They're clicky there. Okay? Let me tell you the click that I run in. It's called the serving click. It's where we serve others. Now, a click says, this is what a click says, that only a certain people are allowed in and other people have to stay out. You know what I've found about the serving click? Everybody's welcome. Everybody can be in it, right? And here's what happens. The reason why people think that is because they see, well, certain groups of people normally stick with certain groups of people. They spend a lot of time together. Well, could it possibly be that the reason why those people are going out to lunch is because they stayed to serve other people and now they're hungry and you're here and I'm here, so let's go do lunch together. That's not clicky to me, right? It just drives me a little bit crazy when I hear that, so I'll get off my soapbox on it. But if you want to be part of, you know, the real clique, it's the serving clique. That's how I met people here. I served them or I served with them, and that's how I've met some of my good friends here. And then he says, but, that's a contrasting word, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Sticks there means clinging or adhering to. What is he trying to tell us? A friend can be better than a sibling. Now, you have to understand that this is being said in a culture where family was the prominent thing. Blood is thicker than water, always. Not, we live in somewhat of a family dysfunction world system that we live in today. We have all kinds of TV shows that promote dysfunctional, where the husband is made to look like an idiot and doesn't know what he's doing and all that type of stuff. Culturally, that wasn't acceptable back then. They had their priorities straight. So family was first. So why would he be telling us that a friend can be better than a sibling? Because you choose your friends, you don't choose your family. A friend is someone who has chosen you and you've chosen them. Okay? Your blood relatives, now, I'm not making a blanket statement here, but your blood relatives, they should be there for you when you go through troublesome times, a difficult time. I mean, culturally, back then, and kind of it is today, they kind of are obligated to do that. But you may not like your family, and they may not like you. I mean, how many of you guys have, I love my family, and if somebody's going through something, I'm going to be there for them, but there's some of them, I'm just being honest, I don't like them. I'm not going to call them this afternoon and hang out with them. They're drama. I'm just being real, okay? So don't send me a hateful email. But that's the point here is culturally they may be obligated to do that, but you may not like each other. See, a friend brings something into your life that family doesn't. They're there by choice, not because they have to, but because they choose to. Do you guys have any friends that you talk to more than you talk to your blood relatives? Raise your hand if that's the case in your life. You're making my point. Because you're choosing to be a part of one another's life, there's a fondness there, okay? So this friend who sticks, it means clings to, adheres to, what they do is they hold on to you tightly. closer than a brother. This is the type of friend in your life that's in your life for the long haul. And there's not a lot of people that we can say. That's why I said what I said in my 20s. I thought, I'm going to have a ton of these. In my 40s, I know that not to be true. And I just want to encourage you that if you have people in your life like that, that you should cherish them, that you should thank them for that. Maybe even take them out to lunch. I know a good place, White Chocolate Grill. And if I happen to be your friend like that, I wouldn't say no. Saying. There's this little caramel thing that we might want to try. D.L. Moody said, a true friend is like ivy. The greater the ruin, the closer he clings. Now let's look at the second C of a true friend, candor. Candor, here's what it is. The quality of being open and honest in expression. It's telling your friend the truth. So turn to Proverbs 27, verse 5 and 6. Proverbs 27, verse 5. Open rebuke is better than love carefully concealed. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. So out of the four C's of friendship that we're talking about this morning, this is probably the most difficult to practice because it involves something that people are uncomfortable with, confrontation. Some people don't like to confront, and they don't like to be confronted. And I get that. I mean, I don't like having those difficult conversations with people. I mean, I don't sign up for them. I think there might be something wrong with you if that's all you're looking for. But sometimes those need to take place. And I know it's hard to be honest and confront someone, especially one that you love, when it goes against the grain of your personality. Some people have a personality type where they're just like, I just don't want to do that. I want to run far, far, far away from that. Okay? But let me see if I can try to help you overcome that by explaining to you what Solomon means here. Solomon is using metaphors, comparisons, in both of these verses. So in both verse 5 and 6, he's saying the first line is better than the second line in both of those. So first line, good. Second line, bad. So the first line in verse 5 is open rebuke. What does that mean? It means uncovered correction is better than love that is carefully concealed. What do you do when you conceal something? You hide it. You cover it up. So here's what he's telling us, the good thing, okay? It is better to correct your friend's behavior than to hide your love for them. Okay? It is better for you to correct your friend's behavior than to hide your love from them. This is the person that's not doing this. This is the person who thinks they're being loving by hiding or covering up the truth from their friend. They're the person that says, Pastor Joey, I love my friend way too much to confront them or tell them the truth. Now look at what that's being compared to in verse 6. Faithful are the wounds. What's a faithful wound? It's a metaphor that he's using there. It's a metaphor for words that your friend needs that are going to be maybe painful for them to hear, but they need to hear it. Let me say that again. It's a metaphor for words that your friend needs that are going to be painful for them to hear, but they need to hear them. Because we don't like criticism coming our way, do we? We don't like when people, you know, the perception is you're trying to tear me down or whatever. However we can take criticism in our life, and various people take it different ways, okay? We don't like to necessarily do that, but the words are going to hurt, but it's better than the next line when he says, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. So the one that hates you is the one that gives you plentiful kisses. He's saying this, an enemy, one who hates you, is excessive with his Judas kisses to hide his disloyalty and hatred for you. That person is pretending to be your friend. They're a false friend. Just like Judas kissed Jesus, betraying kisses. You're betraying your friend when you're not truthful with them, is what that's saying. Okay? So hiding or covering up the truth out of love in verse 5 is the same work of an enemy in verse 6. But Pastor Joey, I love my friend too much to tell him the truth. You're not being a true friend. You're actually wounding them by not saying something to them. Now, you have to put something in the middle of candor or candor doesn't work. It's called love. We're to tell the truth, be candor to our friends in love. Because if we leave out the ingredient of love, we're wrong. There's this verse called in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 that says that if you don't have love, you're a clinging cymbal. What in the world does that mean? You're irritating. So if you are candorous, if you are a truth teller to your friend, but you don't have love, then you're irritating, is what that's saying. Well, Pastor Joey, I'm just one of those guys that just tells it like it is, man. Just but say what I mean what I say. Well, let me be candorous with you. You're wrong because you don't have love in the middle of being candor. That's what it's saying there. Okay? A real friend will tell you what you need to hear rather than what you want to hear because they love you too much not to tell you. If I was to wrap that up, that's the way that I would say it. And even though it's hard and uncomfortable, your loving rebuke to your friend is going to produce a good result in your relationship. Turn to Proverbs 28, 23. Although it was uncomfortable, although it was maybe against the grain of your personality, there's something that's going to take place because of it. Proverbs 28, 23 says, he who rebukes a man will find more favor afterward than he who flatters with the tongue. Favor here means this. It means accepted, approved, or well thought of. Now think about that. Let's inject that meaning back into the text. He who rebukes a man will find more acceptance, more approval, and be more well thought of afterwards. What? This was difficult. I didn't want to do this. Maybe they didn't want to receive what I had to say. Maybe I didn't want to tell them, but you're going to be more accepted, more approved, more well thought of. Why? Because the person's going to see where you are coming from, that you are actually not trying to do them harm. You are trying to do them good. You were doing them a favor by saying something to them because you know why? You were looking out for them. I think that's why he's trying to say this here to us. It's going to be more beneficial. They're going to see it as beneficial rather than the other people that they have around them that just try to smooth talk them and butter them up for personal gain. That's what the flattering tongue says. The flattering tongue butters you up and smooth talks you for personal gain. I think Solomon would understand those type of people having been king of Israel. There was probably a bunch of people in his presence that always tried to butter him up, always tried to smooth talk him into certain things. But remember, he's the second wisest man to ever walk the planet. Now let's look at the third C of a true friend, counsel. Counsel is this, advice, opinion, or instruction given in directing the judgment or conduct of another. A biblical friend is one who gives and receives wise counsel. Turn to Proverbs 27, 9. Proverbs 27, 9. Ointment and perfume delight the heart, and the sweetness of a man's friend gives delight by hearty counsel. So ointment and perfume there is when you used to go to entertainment places, locations, and stuff like that, they would spray, as a way to create atmosphere, they would spray these oils and perfumes on you. So think of it like, which is kind of weird, but think about it like lighting a candle in your house, right? Does you guys like to light candles? It makes the house smell good. It makes you happy. It gives you this sense of, man, I like this smell. Smell associated with certain memories. So like that, So ointment and perfume rejoice the heart. It makes the heart happy. Just like that is the sweetness of a man's friend as he gives delight by hearty counsel. Hearty counsel means from the, hearty means from the heart. And counsel means secrets. So you have that friend that you're able to tell secrets to, that you're able to confide in. So he's saying that wise counsel is pleasing. You know why it's pleasing between this situation? Is because those guys, whoever this person he's talking about, they're letting each other in. They're being exposed before one another, vulnerable with one another, because they love and trust one another. And because I do a lot of counseling, I'm able to speak wisely about this subject. I encounter a lot of people that do this in their life, and I get it and I understand it, but it's wrong. Somebody hurts you over here, and then here's what happens. Nobody else is allowed to get in, so everybody else over here pays the price for what knucklehead did over here. Now, I understand that there's a way that you need to walk in being vulnerable and letting other people in. You need to be wise about that. You can't trust everybody with what you tell them. But that's why this close friend, they've been proven over time to be trustworthy, to be faithful, to keep secrets, to confide in, because they don't run their mouth. Those are the type of friends that you want to have around you. So ointment and perfume make the heart happy, but the sweetness of a man's friend gives delight by hearty counsel. A friend who gives wise counsel, who speaks the truth in love or shows his approval by discreet praise, makes his friend's heart happy, is what he's saying here. Because I can be myself around that person. I don't have to put on a front. I don't have to put on a show. I can just be me. Turn to Proverbs 11:14. Proverbs 11:14, where there is no counsel, he's speaking about wise counsel there. Where there is no wise counsel, that means no guidance, no good advice, no direction, no steering. What's the result of that? The people fail. What it means there is that the people suffer defeat, failure, or ruin. So because there's no wise counsel going forward in your life, no guidance, no good advice, no direction, no steering, right? Somebody who steers you, who says, hey, you should probably move in this direction. Here's what happens to those type of people. The self, the person that relies on self, they suffer defeat, failure, or ruin. But there's good news. But in the multitude of counselors, so someone that's giving you wise advice about problems, there is safety. Safety there means deliverance, salvation, or victory. So I could be the person that doesn't listen to anybody and does it my own way, and I'm going to fall. I'm going to suffer defeat, failure, or ruin. Or in the multitude of counselors, when I get wise advice about my situations, I can experience deliverance, salvation, and victory. Here's the idea. We need wise counselors in our lives because all of us have blind spots, don't we? Blind spots is when you sift your personal, whatever you're going through the lens of your own past experiences, right? Now, Shalyn and I are in a very unique time in parenting, okay? We have grown adults, almost a 21-year-old and an 18-year-old going to college, staying in our home, okay? And now is the time where we begin to let them go and let them become men, which is hard. Because you've spent your whole life bringing this, like every fiber in your being has been protecting this child that's God's given you and training them and pouring into them and supporting them and being here and being there and doing all these type of things where you've stuck very close to them through all of the season in their lives up to this point. And now you find yourself having to let go so you can let them become who they are. And you run into situations where you don't necessarily know what to do. And what I do is I seek people that are wiser than me. Like when I'm in a situation where I don't know, man, I'm thinking about doing this or how should I handle this situation in this phase of life? I seek people that have been there, done that, and that are wise. I talk to John because he has adults that are serving the Lord that he's raised. I talked to Pastor Dave. He has a couple kids that are married. I talked to other of you guys that are ahead of me in life. How do you deal with this situation? What do you do when you're trying to let go, but somehow you want to kind of still stay tight? What's the balance there? And that's what it's saying here is we need wise counselors in our life so that we don't sift things through the lens of our own past experiences. We do the wise thing. It's good to be able to bounce things off of godly people in order that we might be able to make the wise choice so that we avoid those things, the defeat, the failure, or the ruin, and we get to experience deliverance, salvation, and victory. You know why? Because we listened to wise counsel. We listened. We weren't the person that, I'm just going to do what I want to do. You seek wise counsel so that you can hedge doing the right thing there. Wise people seek advice before others, before acting on it. Amen? Now turn to Proverbs 15:22. Kind of along the same line, Proverbs 15:22, he says, without counsel, plans go awry. Here's what that means. So without counsel, plans fall short of what's expected, meaning that you don't reach your goal. But in the multitude of counselors, they are established. So what he's saying there is without counsel, you're going to fall short of what you are expecting. You're not going to reach your goal. But the multitude of counselors, there they are established. With many wise counselors, your plans succeed. Because when you're seeking wise people, you're getting this information. Oh, yeah, I didn't see it from that point of view. Oh, yeah, I didn't even think about that. Or, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. You're taking all of those things into consideration to make the best decision so that you can get the best outcome. That's what you're looking for. So you need wise people in order to pour into your life to give you that information that you need in order to make the best decision. Make sense? I didn't lose anybody in that, right? That's what you're trying to do there, okay? But there's a timing to that. Look at the next verse, 15:23. A man has joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word in due season, how good it is. So a word spoken in due season is advice given at the right moment, and that is most fitting in the proper manner, okay? Joey, what does that mean? It's not just about what you say, but how you say it. The delivery can sometimes be even more important than the actual message. Now, I know that personally because when I was raising, you know, the boys, there were times where I was too hard on them. The message was too direct. It was too black and white. The message was good. The counsel that was given was good. But as my wife will be a good barometer for me, the delivery was not good. We have to watch that. That's injecting that love into being candor. You can tell the truth, but there's a balance to it. You've got to have love, but you also have to have timing. If I have a hard day at work and I come home and it's clearly noticeable on my face, I probably don't want to talk about something major. I probably don't want to discuss something that I got to make a major decision on. The timing may be off on that. Pray about the timing of how you approach people, not just what you say, but the timing in which you say it. Turn to Proverbs 27:17. As iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. So it's talking about sharpening things. Right? So iron tools are made sharp and fit for use by rubbing them against a file or some other iron. So when you're sharpening things, you've sharpened knives before. What you're doing is you're sharpening the edge so that it can be useful to you. You're trying to cut things or a sword. You need it to be sharp for battle. Whatever that is, you're sharpening it against something else that's sharp. Okay? You wouldn't sharpen a knife with like a fruit, a banana. It's not going to sharpen it, right? You need something strong to sharpen it on, okay? And so he's saying just like that, so a man sharpens the countenance, it means the face or the edge of a sword of his friend. So he's saying this, the people you choose to spend time with will either sharpen you or dull you to spiritual things. I teach my sons this. Christian Colin, who you spend time with is who you will become. What they like is what you'll like. What they like to do is what you'll like to do. So choosing a friend seems pretty important in light of that, doesn't it? That I become who I spend time with. And this type of man that's being described in this text is the man that'll keep you sharp spiritually. This friend is going to help you succeed. And to sum all of this up, I think in terms of counsel, it means this. Good advice blesses both the giver and the receiver of the counsel. So you give it and you also receive it. Finally, let's look at the fourth C of a true friend, carefulness. Carefulness. It's being cautious in one's actions towards their friend. Being cautious in one's actions toward their friend. Turn to Proverbs 25, verse 17. Now in verse 15, 16, and 17, he's talking about moderation. That we got to be moderate about things. I think in verse 16, I think is when he's talking about honey. Hey, honey in of itself, it's a good thing. Remember back then they didn't have sugar. So honey is what you use as sweet tasting things. Honey is good, but you could have so much of it that will make you sick, is what he's saying. Okay? I don't know that I could get sick of white chocolate grill, but there might be a possibility. Okay? So in light of that, look at verse 17. Seldom set your foot in your neighbor's house, lest he become weary of you and hate you. Too much of you and your friend will hate you. Now, once again, is it a good thing to hang out with people and get fellowship and spend time? Absolutely, right? But Mama said it this way, don't wear out your welcome. Don't wear out your welcome. Because if your neighbor sees you coming, and then you start to see lights being shut off, and people are diving on the floor to avoid detection, that could be a sign that you might have come over one too many times that week. Too much of you and your friend will hate you. Okay? Too much of a good thing ceases to be a good thing. Familiarity breeds contempt. So friends are careful not to wear out their welcome. Turn to Proverbs 26, verse 18 and 19. 26, verse 18. Like a madman, that means insane person, like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death, is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, I was only joking. Look at this. Okay, so here's what it's saying here. The madman injured his friend, okay, by what he was doing, throwing deadly flaming arrows. James talks about that. How do we do that? With our tongue, the way we talk to people. Okay, so he injured his friend. He claimed that he was only joking, but the damage that was done is not less real to him because the madman says, I wasn't being serious. I was just joking. What is he talking about here? What is he trying to tell us? Practical joking can sometimes be a serious manner. Now, we joke all the time with people. I do. I like joking with people. You know what I mean? But there's a line that you can cross, where now your joking has become hurtful to people, or too frequently that you do it, now people feel picked on. So practical joking can sometimes be a serious manner. We say a lot of hurtful things under the banner of, I was only joking. And here's how we do that. We shoot out our fiery arrows towards someone with our mouth, they get offended, and our comeback to them is, it's just a joke, man. Can't you take a joke? Lighten up, bro. It's just teasing. Okay. Well, look at their face. It doesn't look like they took it the way you intended. And have you guys any of done that? Have you ever crossed the line, right? A lot of you are lying right now. You're lying in church. You've done it. You crossed that line. You thought it was funny, and you crossed that line, whether you crossed it intentionally or a lot of times, you know what we tend to do? We tend to mean it this way, but it becomes personal. It's like an intentional jab on somebody. We got to be careful of that because I've seen the aftermath of it. When I've done it or just when I've observed in casual conversation, I've seen somebody's countenance change immediately. It's hurtful. That's not being cautious with your friendships, okay? So a true friend is careful of other people's feelings. So I think Proverbs says that in wrapping all of this up, that a biblical friend will be more careful and considerate. A man walking wisely will seek to measure his words, be thoughtful of his presence, and examine the timing of his counsel. So the four C's of a true friend: constancy, candor, counsel, carefulness. So I entitled this morning's message, "Would I Want to Be My Own Friend?" I hope that that challenged you to be a better friend today, tomorrow, than when you came in here. I know it did me. It challenged me. There's things that I do well on these, and there's some that I need to do a little bit better job on. But allow me to challenge you a little bit more in closing. When I started my message with Proverbs 17:17, it says that there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. A friend there is singular. There is one friend that does this perfectly at all times and in every situation. Do you know the friend that we're talking about there is? It's Jesus Christ. He's the one that loves us in every situation. Think about it. He loves you in every situation, all of your times. He is the one that knows everything about you, like that seven-year-old. A friend is someone who loves, knows everything about me and loves me just the same. Because he said he'll never leave you nor forsake you. We are never disposable to him. We have favor with him. We're accepted, we're approved, we're well thought of in his eyes. And he always tells us the truth about ourselves in love. Does that through the Holy Spirit. And he's given us the best counsel that you can get on the planet. Everything you need for life is right here. Bible, right? Basic instructions before leaving earth. So what that means, everything you need to be successful in life is found in here. We got the best counsel. A couple things and we'll wrap it up. This is how Jesus said about friendship towards those that have put their faith and their trust in him. He was about to go to the cross and he said this, John 15:13, greater love hath no man than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. You won't find a greater love ever displayed in all of history because of what Jesus did, lay down his life for the guilty, that while we were sinners, Christ died for us. And he was talking with his disciples right before he goes to do this, and in John 15:15, he says, no longer do I call you guys servants, for a servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends. For all things that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. Everything that my Father said to me, I have told to you. I have shared wise counsel. I've been candor with you. All of those four C's, Jesus was to his disciples. And he didn't have a lot of them, did he? There was 12, but then there was 3 that he spent a lot of time with. You know why it's hard to have a lot of friends in your life? Because of what is required of a friend. It's going to cost you something, your time. Now, lastly, I'm going to land this plane. Matthew 5:16 says, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. I was thinking last night, I wonder if good works, that people may see your good works. I wonder if friendship is included in good works. I think it is. I think that you're out there living your life and you're doing your thing, that the way you are a friend to others makes people see that and want to glorify your Father in heaven, because they say, that's not the type of friends that I have. I want what that guy has. I want to be that type of friend. Amen? Let's pray.